Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the PION AG conference call on the financial results for 2017, hosted by Dr. Wolfgang Söhngen and Abdelghany Omari. For the duration of the call, you will be on listen only. However, at the end of the call, you will have the opportunity to ask questions. If at any time you need assistance, please press star zero on your telephone keypad and you will be connected to an operator. I'm now handing you over to Ralf Penner to begin today's conference. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much for your kind introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us for PION's earnings call on the financial results of 2017. My name is Ralf Penner. I'm PION's Vice President, Investor Relations, and I'll be moderating today's call. I'm joined by Wolfgang Söhngen, PION CEO, as well as Abdelghany Omari, our Chief Financial Officer. Within the next half hour, we are going to highlight some of the 2017 achievements, give details on the financial results, highlight the most important events, and provide a pipeline and strategy update and a financial outlook. After this initial presentation, we'll be happy to take questions. I would like to point out that the slides for the presentation can be accessed by webcast in parallel to this conference call. The webcast details have been posted on our website and were also given in today's press release. If you have not already opened the webcast link, you may want to do so now. This conference call is being recorded, and a replay will be available later today and will be posted on our website. Before we get started, I would like to remind you that today's call may include forward-looking statements and that actual results may vary from PION's current anticipations. I also would like to refer to the disclaimer included in the presentation slides. An Hinweis für die deutschsprachigen Teilnehmer: Als international operierendes Unternehmen halten wir die Präsentation in englischer Sprache. Wir möchten den deutschen Teilnehmern am Ende jedoch auch die Möglichkeit geben, ihre Fragen in Deutsch zu stellen, die wir dann auch in Deutsch beantworten werden. After these initial remarks, I believe that we should start right on now with the presentation. Wolfgang, please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Ralf, and hello to everybody listening in. A personal remark up front. I'm suffering from a sore throat, as you may hear, so that I do not receive calls asking if I'm not feeling well or if I have any problems. I'm very fine. I'm very proud of what we have achieved in 2017. It's just my voice doesn't help me right now. Excuse also if I need to cough in between. Let's start with the slide with the disclaimer already we are through. Let's start with the slide three. We really see remimazolam as a success story, and we also get feedback on this, specifically for what we have achieved in the years 2016 and 2017, with the completion of the U.S. program and also finally, that we have been able to have a new partnership for Japan. The rest I leave for you to read this in a quiet moment. I do not want to block the time for this, but I'd rather give you, for those who are not familiar with PION, a brief overview about PION. We're based in Germany, and a specialty pharma with a focus on anesthesia products. Remimazolam is our lead candidate and is currently also the only drug that is under development at PION, and as such, our key value driver. We already have eight regional partnerships with remimazolam, spanning the globe. The last addition was the partnership with Mundipharma Pharma for Japan. We are a very virtually organized company. The headcount is 34 on average in 2017, but you must assume that we have a significant number of consultants and people who work, for example, at our contract manufacturer organizations. At a minimum, I would assume that the workforce working on remimazolam is at least threefold of what we have here internally. At the end of 2017, we had a cash of 25 million, which is really the key performance indicator for a biotech, and this is sufficient to achieve our next goals. I also will not go too much in slide six. You see that there is a certain volatility in our stock, but recently it looks like we are stabilizing at a market cap of around 150 million, and we have a pretty good liquidity, which I think is pretty good for the company of a size of PAION. Now let me go through what happened in 2017. The focus and the highlight definitely were the results and the reporting of the U.S. clinical trials in procedural sedation. We also finished, we also saw that our partners are more engaged also in clinical development. In Russia, a study is ongoing, and we expect to hear that the study has been completed in the near future. As when we wrote those slides, we still said that Hanafarm plans to start a phase three, and as some of you may have seen, actually today we received in the morning the news that they have enrolled the first patient, which is really very good news. So also that means that our partners are very active. On the next slide, you see our regulatory activity. The main point in 2017 was the interaction with the Canadian health authorities, who essentially gave a green light for filing. Whether or not this is happening in parallel to FDA or not is currently being discussed. But our current sentiment is that Pendopharm first wants to see FDA filing, because that is normally the way things are done in Canada. We have expanded our supervisory board, and we also have expanded significantly our patent portfolio, which is important, with two more patents, and IP creation is an ongoing process at PAION. And we are also currently working on something very interesting. With respect to our licensing strategy, we were able to close a deal with Mundipharma at the end of the year. We received $1 million upfront payment, and we expect some $25 million of future milestones to come in, and the royalty rate, which is on average probably going to be 20%. So that deal in essence is more valuable than the deal that we had with Ono with Ono at the time. Something very important happened towards the end of the year when the FDA considered our human abuse liability study to be completed. So we were not required to do an additional intranasal study that we actually had prepared and almost launched. The good news about the findings of the intranasal is that we now see also the intranasal route as a viable route, for example, for use in children, but also maybe in certain situations for grown-ups. With the reference to the financing that we did last year, I would like to hand over to Abdel to guide you through the financials. And one of the first things is his explanation on the financings that we did last year. Abdel, please.
Thank you, Wolfgang. Good afternoon, everyone. Ladies and gentlemen, now I would like to guide you through the financial key figures for 2017 compared with the previous year, and also give an outlook for the full year 2018. First of all, I would like to briefly recap the capital increases that we have conducted in 2017. In February 2017, we carried out a capital increase with subscription rights for existing shareholders with gross proceeds of 5 million euros. We had a backstop investor from the U.S. to buy all shares that were not subscribed. The uptake of the offering was 96%, and in total, we issued 2.4 million new shares. Then in July 2017, we did a private placement with two investors at €2.84 per share, with gross proceeds of 8 million euros. A U.S. institutional investor invested 5.2 million euros and may subscribe to another up to 2.8 million new shares until end of April this year. And our second largest shareholder, TI Craft, invested 2.8 million euros. In total, we issued 2.8 million new shares. With these two capital increases, we have raised about 13 million euros, which now, after we closed the deal for Japan, enable us to start the phase 3 study in general anesthesia in Europe without further financing. I will give more details about this later in the outlook. Let me now move to the P&L. Revenues increased compared to 2016 and amounted to 5.8 million euros. Essentially, all of these revenues relate to the revenue recognition of the remainder of the upfront payment of 10 million euros that we received in 2016 from Cosmo. Research and development expenses amounted to 17.9 million euros, which is a decrease of 5.6 million euros compared to 2016. This decrease mainly results from lower costs for phase 3 studies on the one hand and higher costs for phase 1 studies on the other hand. General administrative and selling expenses amounted to 3.8 million euros and decreased by 1.3 million euros compared to the previous year. General admin expenses decreased mainly due to costs for the preparation of potential capital measures in 2016 that were ultimately not conducted. Selling expenses decreased mainly because essential costs in connection with the preparation of license agreements in 2016 have not been incurred in the same extent in 2017. In connection with the research and development expenses, we show tax income from tax credit claims in the amount of 3.8 million euros. In total, we show a net loss of 12.1 million euros, a decrease of 8 million euros compared to 2016. This is in line with our guidance of about 12 to 14 million euros. Now I would like to move to the balance sheet and an overview of headcount. The total assets decreased by 6.1 million euros compared to end of 2016. This mainly results from a lower tax credit claim due to lower R&D expenses than in the previous year and a reduction of cash and cash equivalents. As you can see on the upper right-hand side, cash decreased by 5.3 million euros compared to end of 2016. This reduction stems especially from negative cash flows from operating activities of 17.7 million euros on the one hand and positive cash flows from financing activities of 12.5 million euros on the other hand. Cash flows from financing activities primarily result from the two capital increases that I outlined earlier. As you can see on the lower left-hand side, equity slightly increased by 0.3 million euros to 25.2 million euros. This change mainly results from the net loss of the year and the conducted capital increases. The equity ratio was 79.1% at the end of 2017. The staff development is illustrated on the lower left-hand side. Compared to an average number of 36 employees in 2016, we had 33 employees on average in 2017. At the end of the year, we had 34 employees. Finally, I would like to give an outlook for the full year 2018. This year, our main goals are the completion and transfer of all data and documents in the U.S. to Cosmo and the start of a new phase 3 study in general anesthesia in Europe. We will also continue to work on production development for remimazolam. Regarding revenues, we expect these to amount to approximately 3 million euros. This is mainly in connection with the regulatory filing in Japan and the Japanese license agreement with Mundi Pharma. Given the ongoing development activities, including the European phase 3 study, we will continue to incur significant R&D expenses, which we estimate to be in a range of about 15 to 17 million euros. SG&A expenses will be comparable to 2017 and amount to about 3.5 to 4 million euros. Based on the estimate for the R&D expenses, we expect tax income from UK tax credits in the amount of approximately 3 million euros. In total, we expect a slightly increased net loss in the amount of approximately 12.5 to 15 million euros. Should the regulatory filing in the U.S. happen in 2018, revenues and net results would obviously be higher. Regarding our liquidity, with cash of 24.8 million euros at the end of 2017, we have sufficient funds to complete all remaining activities for procedural sedation in the U.S. and will not need additional funding to bring remimazolam to the U.S. market if things progress according to plan. For the European Phase 3 study, we will not need additional funding based on current planning. Cash and cash equivalents, including expected potential milestone payments and expected tax credits, secure the conduct of the European Phase 3 study and a cash reach into the second half of 2019. Until filing for market approval in Europe, further funds of about 15 million euros will be required based on current planning. These may partly also come from potential further milestone payments. Thank you so far. Now I hand back to you, Wolfgang.
Thank you very much, Abdel. The next slide that you will see may be familiar to some people, but in the past this was more our expectation what remimazolam would and could deliver. Today we can say it is considered to be the best of both worlds by experts, based on the data that have been generated in the meantime. And this refers to both propofol and midazolam. And it not only refers to the situation in procedural sedation, it also refers to the situation in general anesthesia, where remimazolam addresses a problem that I will go into later. So the differentiation to propofol is that it is as quick as propofol. It has a similar predictable recovery time, and therefore it needs less resources for supervision after a procedure compared to midazolam. When you look at the comparison to midazolam, we have even better safety than midazolam, for example, less hypotension. There's a reversal agent like with midazolam, and because of this, it requires less resources for supervision during procedural sedation. This does not account for general anesthesia. So we see that remimazolam has a good opportunity to substitute at an attractive price both midazolam and propofol in a changing market environment. Now, on the next few slides, I will highlight what are the important issues in sedation, in anesthesia. It is always patient safety is first, and it has now become clear that hypotension is a major culprit in the setting of anesthesia, and it has become the center of publications and key meetings in order how to address this problem. The advantage of remimazolam is the reversal agent, which is not only key in procedural sedation in case of too deep sedation. It is also important in the setting of general anesthesia, specifically in Japan, as we have learned from physicians there, because in Japan, many hospitals do not have a so-called post-anesthesia care unit. So therefore, as long as the patient is not waking up, the operation room is blocked. So to have a reversal agent may expedite patients out of the OR quicker even than with propofol. The major point, however, and the major safety feature in general anesthesia is the improved hemodynamic stability. That means also that less adrenaline and comparable agents are needed to maintain sufficient blood pressure in patients. And this is specifically important as, and I checked this yesterday, in Germany, more than 50% of all operations in Germany are done in patients of 60 years and older. And this is, of course, a phenomenon that's all over in the Western world. There was an article by an anesthesiologist who was talking about a tsunami coming because the aging population requires more interventions and would also require more anesthesiologists, but in principle, there's a shortage of anesthesiologists across the board. So that means for the safer agent, also anesthesiologists can manage more patients. They have very good efficiency, and also the patient experience is significantly better than with midazolam because patients feel significantly quicker back to normal. And that means that the agent can save costs to hospitals and end users. So in summary, remimazolam is a first-in-class ultra-short-acting intravenous benzodiazepine with specific properties. We also have a broad patent estate to secure market exclusivity in the major markets, and we have now a significant safety database that shows that the drug is very well tolerated. As for commercial reasons and for development, rational development, the sequence of development is first procedural sedation, general anesthesia, and then finally ICU sedation when we have learned how to deal with critically ill patients. So in summary, we have very good efficacy and safety data in a variety of populations. We have been able, and I show that in one slide, to do three trials which more or less generated the same results. We have shown hemodynamic stability in the Japanese population and could show similar effects in cardiac surgery patients in Germany. And we have seen that remimazolam can adequately reach the level of sedation that is required, you know, with hemodynamic stability. The next slide is just an illustration how different treatments and treatment regimens are across the world. What you see here is that in Japan currently, almost 58% of patients do not receive sedation when they undergo a colonoscopy. This percentage is only 2% in the U.S. This illustrates that anesthesia is performed differently from country to country. It also explains why lead indications are differing between Europe and the U.S. and the U.S. and Japan. The next slide shows you the summary of why general anesthesia, why we have seen opportunity in general anesthesia. Hemodynamic stability is important in order to avoid hypotension. There is a clear association between bad patient outcomes and hypotension, and there's growing literature to show that. And the pressure threshold has been now agreed to be around 65 millimeters mercury. I guess none of you in the audience would like to have a mean arterial pressure of 65 millimeters mercury because you would probably fall flat to the floor. And specifically in the elder population, this may also lead to a hypoxia in the brain, which can be very significant. The bars below show you that to what extent the blue bars compared to the gray bars reduce the occurrence of hypotensive events. And also sometimes we see that patients with propofol seem to be over-sedated, too deeply sedated. On the next slide, we show the data on flumazenil, which I have mentioned earlier. This is the reversal agent. And in this example, patients have received a high dose of remimazolam that leads to loss of consciousness. The good news is that if a patient has loss of consciousness, they continue their spontaneous breathing. This is another advantage which also is not only important in procedural sedation, but also in general anesthesia, because there's a difficulty with the intubation of a patient that can be very beneficial. And the other point is that with the availability of a reversal agent, you can accelerate the wake-up of patients, which can save significant costs to the hospital and can be of benefit, of course, to the patient. Now, on the next few slides, the highlights of the U.S. clinical trial program. On the green part is described what were the success criteria, which, you know, were represented in these graphs that you see in a couple of minutes. All patients received a dose of fentanyl before they received either remimazolam, placebo, or midazolam. And the double-blind comparison was against placebo, which was the primary target of the FDA requirements. PION voluntarily added a midazolam label so that we could have some reference to an agent that's frequently used in these patients. On the next slide, which is very important to illustrate how different these patient groups were, you see that the mean age in the bronchoscopy and in the ASA3-4 colonoscopy study are comparable at 62 years of age, whereas in the healthy screening population, the medium age was 55 years. And if you go down to the lowest bar, you see that the number of ASA3 patients are very sick patients, is 37% in the bronchoscopy study, 51% in the ASA3-4. That means that the other half of the patients in this study were even more sick than these ASA3 patients, and only 6.6 patients in the screening population, which is what you would expect. And the FDA insisted, or not insisted, requested, in order to describe the safety profile of remimazolam, that A, we treat a significant number of patients above 65, which we have achieved. They also wanted to see a significant number of patients that have significant comorbidity, meaning other diseases which make them more vulnerable to hypnotic sedative agent. And this has been achieved in these trials. In the bronchoscopy trial, which was the last to finish, you see the procedural success at 83% versus placebo 3.4% and midazolam 35%, which is a significant difference in the comparison both to placebo and midazolam, although for the label only the placebo comparison will be valuable. What you also see is that the time to back to normal in the placebo group seems to be very, very much higher compared to both the remimazolam and also the midazolam open-label part, which is probably due to the fact that these patients received a very high bolus of midazolam, therefore they had a long overhang. On slide 25, you see the comparison of the three trials. The blue bars represent the remimazolam response rate, the gray bar, the placebo response rates, and the red ones, the midazolam response rates. And you see that A, these trials have comparable results, and C, that in all three trials, remimazolam fares much better as compared to placebo and the labeled dose of midazolam. So this transfers then into a commercial argument showing that compared to midazolam, you can treat significantly more patients in the same period of time. That means that A, the ambition to screen as many patients as possible can be better achieved with remimazolam than with midazolam, and secondly, that one physician can do more patients in any given time period, and as we have shown before, patients also feel the difference because they are earlier back to normal. On slide 27 is summarized why remimazolam has advantages against midazolam and propofol, and this is a slide from that was presented at a symposium in Japan and underscores what I said earlier, that experts regard remimazolam as the best of both worlds. So what's up next? Right now we are still in the process of analyzing all the data, put everything together, and then hand this over to Cosmo. Then there is a pre-NDA meeting planned, which will be shortly before the submission, and the most recent guidance is Q4 2018 or Q1 2019. but I can assure you that both Cosmo and Pione work as hard as we can to make this a 2018. Our partner activities across the globe are growing. As I said, the most recent addition with clinical data is the Hanapharm trial in general anesthesia, which enrolled the first patient today. And on the next slide, I briefly go into what the plan for general anesthesia. We have completed a phase one study in order to have a good basis to calculate the sample size for the trial. Based on this, we are planning to recruit some 450 to 500 patients, and we also have the ambition to commercialize remimazolam alone in the European Union, or at least in core countries of Europe, and of course are always open to value-generating partnerships, which may be more attractive for our shareholders. In Japan, now with Mundipharma, we are working on a plan to file in 2018. It's a very new and very exciting interaction. I'm very grateful for the team that takes on this additional workload next to the filing in the U.S., which is a lot of work. And so all this can only be achieved with a highly motivated and dedicated team. So thanks to the team from at this moment for the work in 2017. And, of course, 2018 is probably going to be even more challenging. But that's why you are a pioneer, and that's why you're here. In Russia, we also expect to learn about the results of the trial in general anesthesia that should have been completed in a couple of months, and we don't know how long the evaluation of the data will last, but I guess we will learn before the third quarter about the outcome of this trial. In Turkey, the indications general anesthesia and procedural sedation have the same value, so as soon as either a U.S. approval or Japanese approval comes to the table, this will be used for first filing in Turkey. We have discussed Canada, and in China, Yichang Yunwei is currently performing trials both in general anesthesia and procedural sedation. And in South Korea, I also already noticed what happened today. So in summary, based on the partnerships, we do not only have additional R&D power because more patients will be treated than in our own program, and all these patients will be added to the overall value dossier and safety and efficacy dossier. We also expect a total of future milestones of more than 80 million euro, which is substantial and should help us also to achieve our plans with commercialization, and will reduce the need for funding in a dilutive way. So when we look at 2018, of course, the next big thing for Pione is to initiate the phase 3 in general anesthesia in Europe. And then we look at the filings both in Japan and the U.S., and based on that, also filings in other regions are due to follow in due course. And of course, we are always asked, okay, Wolfgang, some people already think the filing is more or less done. I'm always asked, okay, what's next? So we have taken the time with the management team and the supervisory board to discuss how do we see the mid- to long-term future of Pione. And we believe that with remimazolam, we have the chance to become a global player and have leadership in acute and critical care, because there's not a lot of development going on in anesthesia, and remimazolam will be a disruptive event when it comes to market. So how do we want to achieve our goals, our long-term goals? Right now we focus on getting as many approvals as possible in as many indications as possible in as many countries. That's the key basis of the success story. Then, as I said before, we have the ambition to integrate forward. but we are also open for creative partnering, and that will we will see how this plays out. Let's say in 1 to 2 years from now, we will have a much clearer view on how this will work. And of course, if you want to go alone, we have to consider a portfolio enrichment, and there we are looking for products and medical devices that would fit into the critical care space and acute care, and that should help us to make the transition from a small cap biotech to a really integrated specialty pharma company with the ambition to have leadership in acute and critical care, because that's the space where Remimazolam will be used. And in the future, maybe when we have a different financial basis, we no longer need partnering as we did in the past in order to avoid dilutive financing. We can go more to a distribution type of deal. That would mean that more of the revenues would end up in PAION's cash. So, of course, it is clear that anesthesia alone is not sufficient, and you may ask, so what is acute and critical care? In principle, it means that you need to have in your genes something that I call 24/7 alertness, and I think we have that based on the stroke experience, based on what we did in procedural sedation and general anesthesia. So that is mainly working in hospitals or in intervention centers. And, of course, also one key element is the emergency room, where a lot of patients come up that require acute interventions. And this is not only dealt with by the anesthesiologist, but by all people who take care of acutely sick patients. And, of course, the interventionalists, like those who do colonoscopy or cardiac interventions. And so the scope of the future products has a broader range than one may initially think. So it is everything that the anesthesiologist has in their bag and needs to treat their patients. It is a lot of things that emergency physicians would like to have, what you would like to have in a helicopter or in a Rettungswagen. When you go to patients who are sick at home or in a mass casualty situation, we're not looking for prescription drugs that are used in the GP section, so we will stay in this space, and there are enough small opportunities which may be not attractive for a super big pharma company, but which are very attractive for a company of the size of PAION. So if we look into the future, and as pioneers, we have gone through ups and downs, but we always look into the future with a positive attitude. So we think delivering on approvals across the globe is our first mission. Then we need to add in partnerships and add in products in order to become a real company that is no longer in the small cap segment. Let me put it that way. And why are we so opportunistic that this works? I mean, as I said before, with the intranasal application, we now see a chance to offer something very valuable for children, but this may also be helpful in certain situations for grown-ups. We are continuously offered portfolio opportunities, which we do not take on board right now, A, because they're costly, and secondly, because we need to deliver filing in the U.S. and Japan first before we focus on anything else. And then, of course, I think we have shown that we can partner, and this will be one of the models that we will continue, hopefully also, as I said before, by changing this model to distribution partners rather than partnering because they deliver non-dilutive funding. So thank you very much for your attention, and I now hand back to Ralf. My voice held.
Thank you very much, Wolfgang and Abdel, for your presentation. Now I would like to start the Q&A question and answer session.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you change your mind and wish to withdraw your question, please press star 2. You will be advised when to ask your question. The first question comes from the line of Dennis Holm from Edison. Please go ahead.
Well, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my question. Firstly, in relation to the general anaesthesia in the EU, I was just interested in the trial timing. How long do you expect that phase 3 trial to take in the EU?
Well, first of all, we plan to start this in the middle of the year. And our current assumption is that recruitment will be approximately 12 months based on what we have seen also in the already started feasibility trials. This should be possible. That's our planning.
Okay, and so just in relation to the funding, so that means it'll take a year or a little over. So you say you've got funding into the second half of 2019, so you'll have funding to get to reporting top-line results. And then, as I understand it, you estimate that you'll require a further $15 million until you get to filing. So is that largely to fund general operations and the cost of preparing the dossier in the EU?
That's correct. So with the existing cash, we are confident that we will see top-line data. As we have explained, in the mid between now and then, we also expect filings that could trigger milestones that will add to our current cash position. And of course, then in order to file and prepare commercialization in Europe, then we need to think about additional funding. And as you have heard, when we talk about intranasal, this is related to children. And now with the start of a phase 3 in Europe, we must commit to implement and execute a pediatric plan, which also will require additional funding, which is not covered with the current budget. We are making preparatory steps at this moment in time. That means we talk to KOLs. We think about what's the best formulation and what's the best medical device to be used in an intranasal situation. These are all things that we can do at this moment in time, but to really start the actual clinical trials, this definitely requires further funding. It's justified because in order to offer sedation to children in situations where currently there's nothing that's being offered to them, I think will be a great addition both for the patients and the physicians who have to deal with these poor kids.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for those details. And again, staying with the EU general anaesthesia, you said you've had guidance from the EMA on trial design. Just wondering whether there's been any significant changes to the trial design that had come in, or are things largely in line with your previous expectations for the design of the phase 3?
No, the good news is that based on the very well thought through preparation involving also across European thought leaders, the design was in such a way that, yes, there were discussions, but all the major points have been accepted and will be implemented, and I think that's a great compliment for the team, again, who made this approach.
Okay, thank you very much. That's all of my questions.
The next question comes from the line of Simon Scholz from First Berlin. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. I have a couple of questions. Firstly, on China, you say you're planning a phase 3 in procedural sedation. I was wondering when you expect to be able to file in China in PS, and also what you expect to be the most important indications for Remy Matsulam within PS in China. And also with regards to the guidance on filing, I notice you're now talking about the possibility of US filing in Q1 19, whereas I think previously you were talking about H2 2018. I mean, I realize Cosmo's involved here, but I was wondering if you could give us any insight into the reason for the change. And also in Japan, previously you were talking about mid-2018, and now you've widened that to the whole of 2018.
Okay. First of all, China, we are not performing these trials. The trials in China are being performed by our partner, Yichang, and currently they have not given any further guidance on when these trials will be completed. So we have to wait until Yichang comes back with new guidance on these topics. And they have done the development from scratch, including chemistry and preclinical testing. So they have essentially then at the end completed a development program which is comparable to ours in Japan at least, and maybe even including the U.S. because there's a prerequisite if you want to file in China. Then on the guidance Q4, Q1, this is based on a COSMO guidance that we have received. Nevertheless, we both parties are committed to work as hard as possible to make this happen in Q4, H2 covered Q4. And the reason for that is that there are always things that can take longer, and COSMO may have a more conservative view than PAION, and we have to respect this. So the question is when the last bit that needs to go into the dossier is ready, and that will trigger the pre-NDA meeting, and this is probably the timeline that we have to discuss, whether you take 6 months between pre-NDA and filing or whether you take 3 months. That will make a big difference, and these are things which are currently not fixed but will evolve over the next couple of months. And then the last one was about
Japan.
Well, I mean, you have to understand that we are now in the process of handing over everything to Mundipharma, which is a complex thing. You do not hand over a data room and say have fun. We only do have a significant amount of time that we spend together with the team. I can tell you when we were in Japan to have the kickoff meeting recently, Mundipharma had brought in more than 20 internal and external experts who all wanted to learn about where we are, what needs to be done, and we are now agreeing on who does what to do the filing. And so that is why it takes this time. And also, there may be a request for a special production run for China, for Japan, which is something that we are currently evaluating, and that's defining the timeline.
Okay, thanks very much. That's very helpful.
The next question comes from the line of Sarin Bouzi from Oddo BHF. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my questions. The first one will be on the U.S. partnership with COSMO. If COSMO is to fill in Q1 2019, when do you expect the first royalties to come? Is it realistic to expect it in 2019? The second one is on the European Phase 3 trial on general anesthesia. You're assuming 500 patients to be recruited in 12 months. When do you expect to complete the trial?
Okay, with COSMO, if the filing indeed is in Q1 2019, then approval probably will also be not in 2019. But as I said before, both parties are very committed to get this done in Q4. So the Q1 is just a more careful guidance to the market. Because if we would not say something now, and then in the next quarter would have to say that there is a delay, that would be much more problematic. So, in the EU phase 3 is going to be as I said before, we expect completion by the middle of next year, and so that has not changed. Middle of 2019.
Okay, thank you.
Just a reminder, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad to ask a question. Just a final reminder, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad to ask a question. We have a follow-up question from the line of Dennis Holm from Edison. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you. In relation to the deal with Mundi Pharma in Japan, $25 million of euros of milestones. Can you give us any breakdown between what proportion of those are regulatory milestones versus sales milestones? And maybe some sort of breakdown between first indication and follow-on indications, if you're able to? Thank you.
Currently this is not disclosed, and this is the agreement between the parties, as is usual. Not all partners want the milestones to be disclosed. I would say you can assume that it is containing both regulatory and commercial milestones. That's as much as I can say.
Okay, thanks for that.
There are no further questions from the English-speaking participants, so I will hand you back to Ralf Penner. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much for all your questions. Ich möchte dann jetzt auch die deutschen Teilnehmer bitten, sollten Sie Fragen haben, diese jetzt zu stellen.
Vielen Dank. Sie haben jetzt die Möglichkeit, Ihre Fragen zu stellen. Bitte drücken Sie hierzu die Tastenkombination Stern 1 auf Ihre Telefontastatur. Möchten Sie Ihre Frage wieder zurückziehen, drücken Sie bitte die Tastenkombination Stern 2. Zur Erinnerung, falls Sie eine Frage stellen möchten, drücken Sie bitte die Tastenkombination Stern 1 auf Ihre Telefontastatur. Noch einmal zur Erinnerung, falls Sie eine Frage stellen möchten, drücken Sie bitte Stern 1 auf Ihre Telefontastatur. Es liegen keine Fragen vor und somit übergebe ich das Wort zurück an Ralf Penner für abschließende Worte. Bitte schön.
Ja, vielen Dank. Sollten Sie natürlich im Nachgang noch Fragen haben, können Sie sich jederzeit auch gerne telefonisch bei mir persönlich melden. Again, thank you very much for joining us for Pion's earnings call on the financial results of 2017. I hope that we have been able to answer your questions, but of course, please feel free to give me a call afterwards. If you would like to listen to this call again, please visit our website where the replay MP3 will be posted later today. For now, I say goodbye and thank you very much for your continued interest in Pion.
Thank you for joining today's conference call. You may now replace the handsets.